This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to Sat Mag on Joy 94.9 with me, Ange Barry, and him, Macca, President of Joy.
Thanks, Ange. Thanks, Ange. Our next guest is Nick Rees, Deputy Lord Mayor of Melbourne, and he knows I'm going to say this, and a fellow at Melbourne University School of Government. Is that the right title, or do you just get called a fellow?
That is the place. Good to be with you, Macca. Good to be with you, Ange. And just for the listeners, being a fellow at a school, at a university, is quite a common thing. And not normally that's something that's subject of ridicule, except when I'm on Joy FM with Macca.
Well, it's just, you see, the thing is, when I think of a fellow, I think about the Institute of Public Affairs, and they have more fellows than Brunswick has tram lines. So I just
they do, and so that is the IPA trying to copy a very long-standing tradition in universities of having fellows when you appoint people to schools and make themselves sound like they are, you know, a lofty institution like Australia's great universities are. Mm.
So it's an attempt by the IPA to appear legitimate.
Look, you may well say that. I couldn't possibly comment, Macca.
Oh. Of course not.
Okay, now the John Curtin Hotel, which is well known to a lot of people, and particularly anyone around, you know, the Carlton area, Brunswick area, it's been saved, Nick. But what has it been saved from?
It has indeed, Macca. We have had a win. The people of Melbourne have had a win. So, look, about 12 months ago, maybe less, the Curtin Hotel came on the market. The family that owned it for many decades decided to sell it, and an international buyer bought the property. That caused a lot of concern amongst locals at the Curtin Hotel and lovers of live music as well, because the Curtin is such a much loved live music venue, that it may be developed into, you know, a featureless glass tower, and the venue would be closed. So, look, the City of Melbourne and the state government have been looking very closely at the site over the last 12 months and before, actually. There's been a whole bunch of new heritage controls which have been applied to the pub to try and preserve it as a historic pub, but also an important social location for people in Melbourne. And so those new protections are being put in place. And lo and behold, this week, the tenants at the Curtin Hotel, Ben Russell, Rusty, and Paris, who's the booking agent there, they have told the world that they have succeeded in signing a 10-year lease.
Oh, wow. 10 years.
Oh, fantastic.
So that the Curtin can continue as that much-loved pub and a much-loved live music venue in inner-city Melbourne.
Very important. And I remember having had a drink there many times over the years, probably more times I care to remember. But, yeah, it's great to see it saved. But as a live music venue, yes, it's very, very important as well.
And a haunt of Bob Hawke, apparently.
Oh, yes. Yes.
It's hard to think of a pub that sort of ticks more boxes in terms of significance to Melbourne's, you know, Melbourne life. Like, yes, it's a great live music venue today, and, you know, it's a great place for everyone who still loves a pot and a Palmer and a bit of sticky carpet in there.
Oh, yes.
But to your point, it was also Bob Hawke's favourite watering hole, and for over 100 years it was very much a pub where unionists out of Trades Hall would have meetings, and so it's very much part of the labour history of Melbourne as well.
Well, perhaps it would be good one day to actually, we should get the publican on to tell us about.
Yeah, we should hear the story, Macca.
A bit more about the history. Mm. We want to now go to our other favourite subject, which is the US midterm elections.
Mm. Yeah.
First off, so the result for the Democrats was nowhere near as disastrous as was predicted, or perhaps that they thought. They've retained control of the Senate. They've lost control of the House of Reps, but only by a couple of seats. Is Joe Biden going to run in 2024? And what are the arguments for and against?
So, look, a lot of people have talked about the biggest loser from the midterm elections, and that was definitely Donald Trump. But there hasn't been as much analysis of who the biggest winner was, and that was Joe Biden.
Right.
Because the fact that the Democrats did a lot better than people expected, as you said, Macca, they still control the Senate, still got the White House, and they lost the House of Reps, but only by a narrow margin. Is seen by many as an endorsement of the Biden presidency, which means that his chances of running again as the Democrats' candidate for the 2024 presidential race has received a significant boost. He did, of course, turn 80 this week, so he'll be 82 by the time of the next election. But, of course, if Donald Trump runs again, as he declared he was going to run for the president and he's the Republican candidate, then he'll be in his 80s as well. But, of course, the political hardheads were doing the analysis this week and saying, well, you know, Joe Biden beat Trump in the last presidential. He's done beat him again in these midterms. And so you'd have to say he's a pretty good chance of beating him in the next presidential race. I guess the only argument that would run against Biden running again would be, A, his age. Yeah, he is going to be 82. That will make him, by some considerable margin, the oldest person to ever run for that office. But I think much will depend on who he's up against. So if it's the Donald who succeeds as being wins the primaries and is the Republican's candidate, you'd sort of say, yep, they'll run Biden again. But if a much younger Republican wins the nomination, say a Ron DeSantis, who's the governor of Florida, who absolutely did had a smashing victory in the midterms, then you could see the Democrats thinking we need a younger candidate to go up against the younger Republican.
What about the governor of California, Gavin Newsom?
Well, he is a Democrat, and so he would be, you'd have to think of him as a potential candidate for the Democrats. The challenge might be that, of course, California Democrats are very progressive in the American system, and so they might wonder how a well-to-do, good-looking Democrat from California might go, you know, in the Midwest or down in the South, where elections get won and lost in the United States.
Nick, my take on, you know, observing US politics at the moment, obviously we've seen Nancy Pelosi step away, someone who's been an absolute, I suppose, rock for the Democrats in some ways. And then we look to, you know, the two potential runners for the presidency, should they be Biden and Trump, to quite old white men in a country that is incredibly diverse. It's a wonder, isn't it, that that is the reflection of leadership at the moment, and particularly, you know, the age that range that they both sit in. Obviously, Kamala Harris is fairly, you know, new to this sort of leadership space, but do you think, you know, there's been a lot of conversations about whether or not Biden is in fact coaching her and, you know, getting ready to build her up to step forward. Is that likely?
Look, I think most political analysts would say that Kamala Harris's record as vice president so far has been mixed. She's obviously a very capable woman, and she's had a very accomplished career and, you know, amazing that result that she's the, you know, first Black American vice president. But she's had a few slips as well, and a couple of issues she's been in a bit of a muddle on. So that's why there are other Democrats who are being probably touted as possibly more likely. You also flag a very interesting phenomenon in US politics where they do tend to be quite old. A lot of the senior leaders.
Because they've actually had senators, Nick, in their late 90s.
There was
Strom Thurmond. I think he was, when he passed, he was still in the Senate. I think he was 102.
Oh, good Lord.
Yes.
That's because they don't have much of a retirement incomes policy in
that
the state.
That is outrageous.
So you've actually got a...
it was 102. It was a retirement welfare net in the US, Mecca. I think it's a multitude of factors. One, I think, is the US system really favours incumbency.
Yes.
So once you get elected to that place, literally it's a job for life. And then secondly, I do think there's something in US culture where they, I don't know, respect these older figures, and I'm going to give a sort of a normative judgment here. Maybe some of them stay on longer than they should.
Mm.
Although I would say Nancy Pelosi was still making a great contribution to the...
Absolutely.
And I know Joe Biden's been quite a successful president, you know. Yes, he stumbles a bit with his words and all of that.
Come
but
on.
If you look at his legislative track record.
Yeah, it's excellent.
His record is great.
He's been extraordinarily successful.
Yeah.
Now tell us, is Elon? He's said that the Donald can come back to Twitter, but the Donald doesn't seem to or hasn't come back. Does he? What's going on?
This is the most extraordinary of stories. So, as we all know, Elon Musk has bought and owns Twitter. One of the things he said he would do was he would consider the return of the Donald to the platform. He put up a Twitter poll.
Yes.
15 million people voted in it. And as Elon tweeted early this week, the people have spoken. A margin of 51.8% voted yes to Donald returning. And so Donald, he had his account unsuspended on Twitter. However,
I think Elon stole that election.
Hardly a thumping majority, 51.8% said yes to the Donald coming up again. But here's the twist in the story. The Donald has come out and said, I don't see any reason for it, reason for returning, that is. Now, of course, back in 2017, Donald Trump said that he wouldn't have become president without Twitter. He was one of the first politicians to realise the true potential of the medium and use it to great advantage to build his campaign. Now here he is in 2022 and he's saying, don't know if I will come back. Now, the reason for that is interesting. I suspect it's got to do with money, because Donald has gone and started his own online media platform called Truth Social, which looks a lot like Twitter, and that's where he's getting his message out these days. And that business, Truth Social, has merged with another company called Digital World Acquisition Corp, and they are going to be listed on the stock exchange for about $3 to $4 billion. Donald stands to make a lot of money when this company lists.
Well, that's good. He can buy some more glue for his hairpiece. A message here from a listener who said, the John Curtin Hotel is also a famous watering hole for detectives over many decades.
Ooh.
There you go.
That is very true. The Russell Street Police Headquarters
was just
one block away.
It was.
There. Much history in that.
Much
pub.
History. Now, we've got to go. Nick, thank you again for talking to us and clarifying what a fellow is. Much appreciate that. And let's watch if the Donald does actually appear on Twitter. I reckon he's gonna have to, because closer to the election, he needs that reach. He needs that reach.
Donald Trump has 87.7 million followers on Twitter. And to your point, it's a great way of getting his voice out to all of them plus more.
Mm.
The problem with Truth Social is that they're just not getting the followers.
No.
So he's in a quandary, Donald. Politically, it's probably good for him to go back to Twitter. Financially, he stands to make a lot of money with this deal involving Truth Social.
Mm. Well, there you go. That's it. We've run out of time. Nick, thanks again for talking to us. You are on Saturday Magazine Joy 94.9 with Macca and Ange.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.